This summer, Cincinnati city officials strengthened youth curfew rules as part of their efforts to reduce crime in the city. But what happens when a teen gets arrested? You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss what youth experience when they're arrested and the facility where they're detained are Cincinnati Inquirer breaking news reporter Cameron Knight. Welcome back, Cameron.
Thank you.
And Hamilton County Juvenile Court Youth Center Director of Detention, Brian Bell. Thanks for being here, Brian.
Thanks, ma'am.
Cameron, some teens have been in the news this year for high-profile crimes. Is that what made you want to see what happens when a teen gets arrested?
I was given a little bit of a tour of the juvenile detention center. This was probably over a year ago. And I was just fascinated with the whole process. It's something that most people don't get to see. It's something that is kind of complicated, a little bit hard to understand. And I spent a lot of time trying to get access and get into different parts. So it took a lot of planning. And then this summer, with everything ramping up, it just was a good fit for a time to kind of give people an insider's look at what was going on.
Sure. And Brian, what range of charges can lead a young person to be brought to the Hamilton County Youth Center?
So kids can come to us with any delinquent charge ranging from murder, aggravated assault, high-profile drug dealing, all the way to minor assault. And then we make our determination whether we would hold them or release them from there.
Yeah. And how is that determination made?
With our detention screening instrument. A series of questions that we ask, looking at history and current charges.
Mm-hmm. How long do teens typically stay there? I bet there's quite a range.
An average length of stay will be 30 days for most kids, depending on their charge.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Cameron, you spent time at the youth center in November. Tell us what happens when a teen gets booked.
Well, so they're brought in through a sally port, is what it's called, and they kind of bring them up through the basement. The officers are required to, like, lock up their guns and tasers and everything before they even come into the building. And they bring them up through an elevator, and they're brought into this little area with a metal detector. And they're basically, I think the goal is to keep things safe and then also just determine what's going on with the kids. So they ask them an absolute boatload of questions. Ranging from mental health questions to if they're safe at home, if they're being trafficked, it just goes on and on. And then in the cases of there were two youth that came in while I was there. And in those cases, they were both going to be released to their parents that same day because of the nature of the charges. And in those cases, they just are put in a holding cell. All of their property is taken away from them, anything they have on them, any strings, like if they had shoelaces, like they take their shoes so they don't have strings because that could be like a suicide risk.
Even like a hair tie or something?
Yeah, all of that kind of stuff gets put away in a bag for them to be to get back later. And then they're put in a holding cell and they have to wait for their parents to come pick them up.
Yeah. Brian, Cameron was talking about some of these questions that your staff ask these young people. Can you talk more about that intake instrument, those questions, and why it's so important for your team to get a sense of these young people and their circumstances?
So the initial medical questions that we ask are you hurt or injured? You had any drugs or alcohol in the last 24 hours? Pregnant, epileptic, on medications? To determine their medical well-being at that point. And if they answer yes to any of the questions, we'll have our children's hospital contracted nurses come over and speak to the youth for a little more detailed intervention.
So and then those nurses are there all the time?
Yes, 24-7. Wow. Yes, mm-hmm. Ma'am. And then they'll determine whether or not they have to send them out to the hospital and have them medically cleared, and then they return to the facility. We also ask human trafficking questions. Questions geared toward, have they ever been forced to have sex? Have they had to have sex for trade for anything that they need, forced to work? And if we determine that there may be some involvement in the human trafficking, then we refer them to our safe harbor coordinator.
Yeah. So it sounds like it's really important to ask this boatload of questions, as Cameron referenced. to get a sense for just what you're dealing with. Is there a whole lot of variety in terms of the sort of answers you hear from these young people?
Oh, yeah. It's a pretty wide spectrum of responses that we get from them. And then we respond accordingly. We have a robust psychology department there at the youth center also. So if we're inclined to believe that kids would be at risk of hurting themselves, then we incorporate our psychology and counselors into our intake process. And then they are also involved with the kids throughout their stay at the youth center.
Mm. Well, we are talking about what an arrest is like for a young person in Hamilton County. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Cameron, you mentioned that you observed a couple of young people come into this through this intake process when you were spending time at the youth center in November. What were some of the answers that you heard to these questions? And I say this knowing that we're not identifying any of these young people,
sure,
or we're not using their names or anything like that. But I have to say, reading your story, I thought some of the answers were kind of rough.
It was. One of the things, moments that stuck out to me, and it was the first youth that had come into intake. So it was my first time witnessing any of this. And he was one of the questions that was asked was, do you ever feel like life's not worth living? And the kid who was 15, and he'd been picked up downtown on some drug charges. He'd been found in possession of drugs, and he was agitated when he came in. He was sort of like looking at people and talking and saying, "Don't look at me." And he was agitated. And he, when the Miss Carer, I believe is her last name, Mary Carer, who works there, asked that question, and she asked this to dozens of kids a week. She asked, you know, do you feel like life's not worth living? He said, always. Mm-hmm. And she kind of paused and just asked him if he wanted to talk about that. And he said, no, I'm cool. And then kind of walked off. But it was kind of shocking to hear that when someone's someone kind of comes in with a gusto, and he had kind of a shield up, you know. It was like he was trying to be tough. And then that moment, that kind of dropped for a second, and it was that was surprising to me.
Yeah. Brian, does your team see a lot of that?
We do see a lot of it, and we have significant measures in place to keep the kids safe while they're there because of it. The nature of these types of facilities do lend itself to kids and adults even in their facilities to self-harming action and suicidal ideations. So we have an extremely significant process there to try to prevent those types of behaviors.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit more, Brian, about the process that goes into deciding who gets held at the center and who gets released?
So we have it's an admission model, a detention screening instrument that was created several years ago by a lot of stakeholders around the city here. And it's a series of questions that look at the current charge, previous charges, looks at mitigating factors in terms of parental involvement. Are they responsive to court? Is it a new charge? Are they there on a motion or a warrant based on a current charge? There are a lot of factors that are involved, and it's a calculated measure to determine whether or not they'll be held or diverted.
Mm, okay. Cameron, you mentioned that if they're going to stay, they're in a holding cell for a while. What do the holding cells look like, to kind of paint us a picture of that?
They are, it's, and I assume it's for, function over form here. but everything there was white painted cinder block. The holding cells have a windows on the front and a door so that they can be seen into. And there's like an alarm on the maybe Brian can tell me exactly how long the periods are, but it's every few minutes the alarm goes off, which forces one of the staff members to get up and walk over to the door so they can see what's going on and turn the alarm off when someone is in the cell. And there are cinder block benches where the kids can sit or lay down if they want, and they're there, and then if they can ask if they need to use the bathroom, or if they're cold, they can get a sweatshirt or something like that. I would say maybe 10 feet by 10 feet, 10 feet by 12 feet, something like that, pretty small. And they have multiple ones. So if they have more than one kid, or if they need to separate kids or whatever, they can use more than one holding cell.
And Brian, what's the function of that alarm? Is that to guarantee that there are eyes on that young person on a real regular basis?
Yes, ma'am. To electronically timestamp that, we have monitored the kids. It's randomly every 3 to 4 minutes is what we monitor them. And if we fail to monitor them, then there's a monitoring lapse and notification is reported to our facility control booth, and we respond just to make sure that the kids are being monitored.
Yeah. And that's a safety measure too, I imagine.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Cameron, you know, we talked early on about how sometimes these young people are booked and then released to their parents. How often does that happen?
So there's about 2,500 or so kids that come into the youth center every year. And about 2/3 of them are released to their parent. So the other third are held for some period of time, ranging from a couple of days to years in some cases. But for the most part, it's 2/3 that are brought in or that are sent back to their parents. And one of the situations that I noticed there was that it seems like a lot – one the staff mentioned that it's more common than they would like to have parents push back about coming to get their kids right away. So one of the children that was there, he was a 13-year-old. Again, he was picked up on a drug charge. And when they contacted his parents, this was on a Friday night when I was there, the parents were like, we could come get him Monday. And they were just like, that's too long. So in those cases, the kids can be referred to a shelter if their parents don't pick them up. In the case of this child, he was 13, and I think he ended up sitting there maybe three, four hours before his parents came and got him. So they did eventually come get him. But they do refer children to Meekum House, which is part of the Lighthouse Youth Services, which is a shelter for 10 to 17 year. I think it's 10 to 17 is the range for kids there.
Mm. Brian, what do you hear from parents, you and your staff, when you're reaching out to parents? I mean, I imagine there might be sometimes when there's a single parent and that person's at work and can't leave right away. But what are some of the things you hear from parents when you and your team are trying to contact them and say, hey, we've got your child and can you come get him?
Oh, their responses vary greatly. Some are adamant about coming and getting them right away. Some are, like Cam said, they would rather come and get them some other time. Some are emotional and upset that their kids are there and concerned and worried about them. And some are just angry because they're there and don't really want to deal with having to bring them home and work with them sometimes. So those responses vary, but our staff work with them and just try to help them through the process. One thing to clarify that Cam had mentioned, when we release to the parents, we're diverting them and they're cited to court. They're not actually just released and then the charges are finished. They have to be cited to court and returned.
They have to come before the judge.
Yes.
At another time. Well, that I appreciate your clarification there. Do you ever hear from parents who say, I want to teach my kid a lesson, keep them there for a while?
Many times. Yeah. Many times. Yeah. And sometimes that can be a networking process for the kids when they are upstairs, if they have just entered into the delinquency programs and they start to really refine their skills. So it's not always the best thing for them to enter upstairs.
Sure. It's like that, not necessarily the lesson you want your kid to learn.
Yes.
I mean, is that what you heard from other staff members there too, Cameron?
Yeah, there was one staff member that said exactly that. They, you know, that these some of these parents want to teach their kids a lesson, and this just isn't a lesson that you want them to learn. Mm. Not the place to do it, I guess, is their philosophy on it. And yeah, I mean, if they do get admitted and held, which is, again, if a kid is diverted out of there and they're not going to be held, they're just going to be cited and told to appear in court, they don't necessarily hold them there. They can divert them to a shelter instead. Either of those places are not necessarily fun places to be, I would imagine.
Sure. So. Well, Cameron, I know you've also observed teens at the youth center going to school, kids who are there for a longer amount of time. How is school there different from the average high school or middle school?
Oh, that's a big question. It's different in a lot of ways. The things that were pointed out to me, you know, the things that stuck out to me when I was there watching the classes was the kids have to go, so, and there's nothing else to do. So attendance isn't like a big problem. And nobody has cell phones. So that's interesting too. You know, the only thing that you can do in class, you don't have anything else to do other than engage with class.
Focus.
And the teachers there kind of went out of their way to make sure that, at least some of the teachers, when it was relevant, they went out of their way to kind of craft their lessons plans around the situations that these kids were going through. So the English teacher was asking the students to think about whether it was a parent's fault if the kids were doing something wrong. They were asking them about whether they thought the justice system was fair and good. They had all these kind of tailored things to these kids in this very unique situation that they were trying to address and make them think about, which was interesting to me.
Yeah. Well, Brian, you know, the young people accused of these crimes are presumed innocent, of course, until or unless they're proven guilty. How many of them are there at any one time? And what do you see when you look at them? I think some people see these young people and think, oh, that's a bad kid. But what do you see with these young people who are at the youth center?
So the first question there, our average population is right around 70 kids at any given time. But in all my years there, I think I try to look at them, they're just our kids, right? It's not our job as juvenile detention staff to make any decisions based on a charge. That's between them, law enforcement, prosecution, defense, and judge or magistrate. It's not our job. Our job is to try to make life a little better for them when they get out than it was when they got there. Try to get them back on track with their education if they weren't already on track, and we'll help them work to develop skills in other areas that they may need. So it's not our job or any of the other, pardon me, correction officers to make any decisions based on why or why not them being there.
Yeah. You mentioned all the years you've been there. How long have you been there?
Almost 28.
Almost 28 years.
Yes.
That's got to be tough work. I mean, you see kids at some very unhappy and low points of their life. What keeps you going back for 28 years, almost 28 years?
Those differences that we do make. You know, there may not be a lot of them, but when we do make them, you tend to hold on to them. And we are really increasing those successes here late with a lot of the things that we're implementing and working toward for our kids.
Yeah. What's a success story that you hold on to in your heart?
Most recently are all of our kids, they're receiving their high school diplomas. We're trying to give them something that really no one can take away. And when they get out, it gives them a running start to success once they're released. So just to put it into perspective, in the last year, full year, we've had 22 kids receive their high school diplomas, 11 this year, this past semester, which is remarkable.
Yeah.
Yeah. So very proud of that.
Yeah. That's got to make you feel good.
Yes.
Cameron, what did you hear from other staff members you talked to about why they do this work? This does seem like it can be really tough work to me.
The staff I talked to, the Mary Kerr, who I mentioned earlier, she left her job at the youth center, and what was surprising to me is that she came back to it, and she said that she just missed the kids, and the teachers I've spoken to, the other staff there, they all seem to. All the ones I've talked to have seemed to say that it's been a kind of a calling for them, and they've indicated that it's like they just feel like it's something that they can make a difference where maybe other people aren't, you know, other people can't. And and I've also noticed they all have a similar disposition to. They're all very kind of calm people, which is which is for the environment, you're not, you know, you're not sure what you're walking into. Everything's kind of chaotic. This isn't a place anybody plans to go. If you're a kid, you're not planning to go here. So I think seeing that calmness is probably pretty helpful for some kids.
Yeah. Brian, we don't have much time left, but just in like 30 seconds, is there anything you wish people knew about the youth center and the kids who are sent there that the average person doesn't know?
Well, there's a lot of things, but we've already mentioned our educational program, which we're extremely proud of, and a couple of other things that we've implemented over the last year or so, where we've coupled with Cincinnati Zoo and have a gardening program there. We have multi-sensory rooms to help kids cope with their trauma. Most all of our kids come and have experienced some form of trauma and have minimal coping skills. So we're trying to help them with their coping skills, and we're very proud of that.
Well, I've been talking with Hamilton County Juvenile Court Youth Center Director of Detention, Brian Bell, and Cincinnati Enquirer Breaking News reporter, Cameron Knight. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you, ma'am.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director today is Stephen Baum. And Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.